We are speaking now with Joel Espero, and he is the incumbent and candidate for Sandpoint City Council. Joel, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, let's start for the 5% who may not know who you are, because you're really well-known around this town. Tell us a bit about yourself. How long have you been here? How do you wind up here? What do you feel are your relevant qualifications for holding office as city councilman?
Yeah, good question. I've been here with my family since 1995. My mom and my dad moved here from San Diego. We, you know, it's interesting to say the 5% that don't know me, but there's actually quite a lot of new people in town recently. Even with our customers at the restaurant, we see new faces. So I don't take that for granted. I don't want to assume, because I'm well known, that I'm going to get votes.
In case they don't know, you manage
our family, Joel's Mexican Restaurant, or Joel's. Funny story about that. Had customers fight on the name. They didn't know they were talking about the same place. One was saying Joel's was the best. One was saying Joel's. So it was kind of funny. But yeah, Joel's Mexican Restaurant. I help run that with my sister and my dad. And my mother helped, but she passed recently. Been here since 95, went to Sandpoint Middle School here, high school here, played sports here. And since then, I've been involved in the community with coaching city council for the past 8 years, and raised my 4 kids here with my wife. And we are very much involved in different type of coaching and sports and community events. And of course, the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's the $64 question. Why are you running for re-election? It's kind of a thankless job in some respects.
Yeah, it is a good question. So part of it, I had an interview with somebody, and we were talking about this very thing, is I think everybody's given a gift. Everybody has particular skills or talents, and I think finding out what those are and utilizing them are very important. I've realized the past few years that the gift that I believe God has given me is to be able to communicate, to talk to people, to listen to people, to value people. And a lot of that plays into the city council role, being able to hear people and care about them and care about the place that you live. So I think my qualifications, if you will, is ultimately just, one, I get the votes. People believe in you or trust you to some degree to make the best decisions. Even if they don't agree with your decisions, they go, hey, that guy or that gal, I believe that they care enough that the decision that they're going to make, they really believe in. And they believe it's best for the community. Because those same decisions that they're making are affecting that individual, myself, and my family as well. We're not exempt from these decisions that we're making. So I think part of that is the character that and the trust that I've grown to be entrusted with the community is part of my qualifications. I may not be the smartest man, I know I'm not, but I'm somebody that people have so far have trusted to make the best decision that I believe is best for the community, even if it's something that may disagree with the person that voted with me, for me. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, good answer. Thank you. So you've been on the council, as you mentioned, for 8 years. How do you feel like the council is doing? How do you feel the council has been performing for the residents?
Yeah, I think this council has been great. Obviously, we have a couple of new additions. You know, we had one councilor resign, so then the newly elected mayor appointed a new councilor, so they just jumped right in. Mm-hmm. And then we had Pam Duquette was also elected with Kyle Schreiber. And so, yeah, every 2 years, you just get this different flow. Mm-hmm. That's a really good thing and a hard thing, because it takes a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn. I'm still learning after 8 years. And that's part of another reason I'm running, is there's still more to do. There's still more to learn. I already have a foundation that's helpful to keep building. And so when you got these new people, you have to learn new personalities. You have to learn new ideas. So ultimately, I think we're doing well. Mm. We don't agree on everything, but I think what the character is really good. You'll have times where I'm going toe-to-toe with Justin Dick, for example. Mm-hmm. He may win a particular issue, and my thoughts don't win. It's nothing personal. Mm-hmm. You keep going, or vice versa, right? And I think that's really indicative of a strong council, is when you're able to disagree, and disagree even strongly, but able to shake hands afterwards, mm-hmm. and still move on and say, hey, you thought you had the best idea, I thought I did, but yours won. Well, you move on. Mm-hmm. So I think ultimately we've been doing well, but not perfect, right? You have imperfect people working in an imperfect government mm-hmm. system with plenty of issues of its own. You do the best you can with the circumstances. We got a new mayor as well, so not just, and then no more city administrator. So there's so many nuances and variables that affect your decisions, and it's not that simple. But I think overall, there's a good head on our shoulders with this council, and I've felt really good. You're always going to have struggles. You're always going to have differences, and you got to learn to work through them.
So you mentioned something that it's a good follow-up question here. So the decision was to not replace Jennifer Stapleton as city administrator when she resigned, I guess, almost 2 years ago, or a little less than two years ago. Do you think that's a good direction for the city to not have a city administrator, or is it operating efficiently with the current department setup?
Yeah, good question. This is one of those things that's always interesting with government. You have your own personal convictions, like if you had your own little perfect world, what you think would be best. And then you have, well, it's not my own perfect little world. It's a complex government with different types of personalities and people. So maybe my idea of not having a city administrator in my perfect world is fine in my perfect little world. But once you start dealing with the day-to-day and different personalities, sometimes you're like, oh, maybe a city administrator in this particular context would be good. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, which city administrator, who, or what personality would fit best there? So I think in this particular case, you know, you had ours that who resigned, and then you had the mayor to essentially ask us, hey, I want to earn your trust, and I'm asking for you to give me a chance to not have a city administrator. And the consensus was, okay, we'll give it a shot, and then we'll reconvene later to see how things are going. And I think that time is coming soon. We'll say, hey, let's reassess. Let's see how things are going. Let's see where how people are feeling and how staff is doing. And we'll, you know, we can reconvene here in the next couple months or something. I think that would be appropriate at some point, just to keep ourselves accountable and see how things are going. Because really, city council is important, mayor is important, but the most important thing to me is the staff. How is the staff doing? You know, are they happy? Are they functioning well? Do they have the tools that they need to keep this machine going, if you will? So,
okay. Well, open mic now. Tell us what you think the most important issues in this upcoming term might be.
Yeah, I think now that it's been 2 years with the new mayor, right? You have a new flavor, new set of ideas. But I think the basics are always, you know, your emergency services, fire and police, you know, making sure those are functioning well, just in general, water and sewer, roads, sidewalks, parks, things like that. I think is maintaining what we have and doing the best we can to make sure that those are functioning properly. And that's really what we're here for, is to continue with the basics. Sometimes as a city, you can get off track and your focus can be shifted. So I think it's important that, at least with my, if I'm elected these next 4 years, is to keep focus on the basics, making sure that our basic infrastructure is we're working on that and it's being upkept and we have the funds to do so. So I think it's a good segue would be about our, you know, the bond and the upcoming sewer plan. I think that's very important that we focus on and do the best we can to not only educate ourselves, because it's very complex, but also educate the public on the importance of this project. And it's a big deal.
So, of course, voters in the city are going to see that on the ballot. There's going to be they're going to be asked to approve or disapprove a proposed $130 million bond to completely upgrade the wastewater treatment plant. Are you in favor or opposed?
Yes, I am. I am in favor. I think it's important. I think the most important part is the educational aspect. I mean, nobody likes to see their prices go up. Like, nobody. Our North Idaho, we already have a distrust for our government by default, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I'm in favor of it because we need this. But I think the misconception is that, you know, you hear the term is, well, we pay taxes, so where's the money? Like, you should have enough money to cover all this. And the reality is we don't pay enough taxes to cover everything, especially as we talked about, you know, before the interview started, inflation and the devalue of our dollar. It makes it difficult for everything. Equipment that should have cost, you know, a certain amount of money is now double since COVID. And that's including what it takes to make sidewalks and our roads and infrastructure for our sewer plant. So everything's going up, but we're not, what we pay in taxes isn't going up to keep up with that inflation rate. So my hope is that we can educate the public enough and myself to agree to approve this, at the same time trusting that we are going to be looking for grants and get federal funding to be able to cover, if not all, but most of what it's going to take. So that way our bill doesn't go up significantly, mm-hmm. or it doesn't go up. But I think that's going to take a lot of education for people to see that, the need of this, one, we don't have the money, and really trust that the staff is going to work hard, that the city's going to work hard to apply for these grants, and I would say get them. And I'm very confident we will. Mm-hmm. You know, things aren't looking too hot.
That $130 million amount is what you need to get approved in order to actually go after that grant money, which would then bring the cost to the city ratepayers down.
Correct. Yeah. And that is a goal. And I mean, because that's going to affect every single person sitting on the dais. They're affected by this as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's an incentive for all of us up there, staff included, and the mayor to get these grants and to help bring those costs down so it doesn't affect the locals. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the basic infrastructure that we need. And, you know, we were talking about earlier about, oh, why isn't the plant up at the Baldy Mountain? And
yeah, you know, so for the folks that are listening, the city acquired 20 some acres, I think, or a chunk of acreage that's just off of Baldy Road, just after you get past the railroad tracks going out of town. And it was acquired with the idea of using that property to either replace or augment the sewer system. And since it's been decided that would actually be more expensive, a lot more expensive. This is just kind of a follow-up question. You know, what should be the disposition of that property now? It's where there is the Baldfoot disc golf course.
Yeah, I know that the disc golf community really want it. And I think it's a great spot for the disc golf. So, you know, what it needs to be, I mean, that's for, I think, a future discussion to assess the value and to see where we're at. And if the disc golf community believes that they can afford it and we go that route, then I think that'd be a great opportunity for them. You know, I'm sure there's developers who would love to turn that into something else. How I feel right now is, hey, if it's a good place for the community to do disc golf and other events in the future, then if they can afford that and do that, then that's great. We have to see what the city, you know, our responsibility is to do what's best for the city in that regard. And we'd have to assess that once we see the value of the property and what our options are. Mm-hmm. And it's not that simple. We can't just necessarily do what we want.
Well, that provides kind of a segue into a couple questions about recreation programs in general in the city. First, kind of the most talked about issue probably is the James E. Russell Sports Center. It's been in the news due to shortfalls in anticipated revenues that it was projected to generate for operations. What's your take in general on the James Russell Center? And we should mention it was built without taxpayer money. It was a $7.5 million gift from the Russell family to build that.
Correct.
The question here is, you know, how are we going to operate it? And should city taxpayer money go into operations, or are there other ways to handle that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good question, a very fair question. Obviously, time doesn't allow us to talk about all the nuances with that whole situation, and there's a lot of public comment on that, obviously.
Just in the construction
of it. Correct, and all of that. But to your point about, you know, with recreation and that, I think that what I've learned, at least this side of the dot, you know, or being on the dais and things, is government moves very slow. And things aren't always that simple. And things take time, even from a business perspective, as much as you'd love to be profitable right away, there's things that you didn't see coming. Like, hindsight's always 20/20. So where I stand now is, you know, we hired Ryan Wells, and I think he's doing a fantastic job. And I think he'll continue to find the avenues that we need.
He's the facility supervisor.
Right, to see where we're at and what we need to do. And naturally, we're not just the patient people in general as people, but what you learn is patience in these situations or in business is, like, stay the course, that if you think you have a good plan, and see and reassess when you need to, whether it's a year from now or 2 years. I know people don't like to see that, or it's easy to criticize when things aren't going well right away, especially with a city or a government entity that's already not trusted. But in North Idaho, I've never known a time where you trusted the government or thought they were doing a good job. It's just, that's always the MO. And I would say where we're at now, where I'm at right now is, hey, Ryan's doing a great job. Yeah, things aren't what they used to be. We've lost a lot of recreational sports. And that's another question, right? Is that the government's job to create these programs? That's a different philosophical question that we can tackle at a different time. But I think that has affected the community. And because we're used to having programs for kids. And I'm used to playing volleyball every year. And I played with you and your son and daughter-in-law. And it's a great thing to do in the winter. Now, we don't have that. So it's not just the kids are affected. It's, adults that are trying to stay in shape throughout the winter.
Right. So that's actually, segueing to another whole question about the overall recreation programs in general. I don't know the answer to the question. I should. Why aren't there going to be adult volleyball leagues this year?
Yeah, I don't know all the nuances to that. I know a community director has been dealing, and Parks and Rec have been dealing with that. I haven't, even though I'm affected by it, I'm not playing this year. Usually my family, if you've seen me there, we play every year, my wife and I, and our friends. I want to say there were some issues in agreement with maybe the fairgrounds, but
the use of that facility where they're
the big
convention center where the games are played.
And I try to stay out of that. If there is drama, I try to stay out of that. I don't know all the nuances there, and that's again something that we may not have these recreational opportunities for kids and adults for this year. Mm-hmm. That sometimes just happens, and hopefully this next year we can reassess and figure some things out, and maybe it is the right thing and the proper thing to do, and we can go back to them. I know it's hard in the here and now. We get frustrated. We're used to these programs, but also that's sometimes just part of life. Mm-hmm. You have to step back a little bit. Things don't work out the way you want them to, and things change. So things may go back to normal next year or the year after, or we may see a completely different flow of things. I don't know, and I think that's where we need time to reassess.
Well, here's a related question, and it's actually been in the news because it was just put up by a city website. Anyway, the city is looking to sell the lifeguard stands at City Beach as surplus property. The lifeguard stands were taken down this summer because the city didn't want to give, we don't have any lifeguards, so the city didn't want to give a sense of false security to swimmers that there were going to be lifeguards. Which would also be a liability issue. But so that seems to indicate that the city's not going to get a lifeguard program going again. What do you know about that? Is it a good idea to sell those stands if a program might be coming back?
Yeah, that's a good question. As regards to if we're going to get lifeguards back, I don't know. I know there was a big push for it. I know some council members really pushed for it, and we try to make it happen, and it just didn't happen.
And that really is because you couldn't get enough lifeguards hired
to make it work functionally. And I think the reality is times are changing, right? I mean, can we pay enough to keep the lifeguards? And some would say, well, that's utmost important. Absolutely pay them whatever they need to be paid. And then you have some that don't believe that that's the case, right? So we have a lot of young kids where they would say, yeah, it's a good job, I'm going to do that. And then, but now they're getting paid more money to go work at these other jobs here in town, and they don't want to do that. And it is a hard job. Lifeguarding is very stressful. And you're not just dealing with the stress of maybe having to save somebody's life. You have to deal with the stress of disobedient kids or kids that are not being respectful. And
you have to have a certain amount of training.
Yeah, a lot of training. And the reality is that, as my understanding, it's more of a liability for cities to have lifeguards than not have lifeguards,
because if something went wrong, the affected people might come back at the city.
So that doesn't, I'm not saying that I don't want lifeguards, I'm just saying I know that we did try, and I can't tell you to what the future holds for the lifeguards. And with the stands, should we sell them, should we not, is I'm hoping that in the future, that if we're able to get even some grants to fund these lifeguards, and we're able to pay them enough, then maybe in those grants, we can be able to afford to get a little bit more upkeep on the lifeguard stands. I know, like, when they're off duty, my kids would go up there and play on them, and mm-hmm. I think they needed a little bit of TLC.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just my opinion. It's not a hill I'm going to die on personally.
Okay.
But I will say, though, that I have four kids, and my wife's a stay-at-home mom, and she takes them to the beach at least 4 days a week mm-hmm. in the summer, and we're there quite often. Mm-hmm. So, again, these decisions we're also affected by. And
yeah, well, families have to be more vigilant.
So, just to be clear.
Okay, let's talk about a different subject. So, local impact fees are used to defray the cost of growth, mm-hmm. generally considered to help defray the cost of growth. And the city voted to increase those starting in January.
Correct.
Where did you stand on increasing the local impact fees? And I guess, why put it off till January?
Yeah, nobody likes, again, nobody likes the rise of anything, right? Tax-related impact fees. Nobody likes that. But we are all affected by it one way or another. There is actually a legal obligation for cities to, in the state of Idaho, to visit those, like, I think it's every 5 years, and that's something that we just actually haven't been
keeping up on,
right? So has it benefited people? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there's also a legal obligation for a city to do things like this, and so I think that there was a feeling that this kind of just sprung up really quick, so you get some concerns, some questions, and we felt that as a council, obviously it was unanimous, pretty sure it was unanimous, if not it was close, either way it got the majority of vote to, okay, well, let's give time for people to digest this, to get their plans in order. And if you want to avoid the rise in fees, then make sure you have everything submitted and ready to go by January. So, if you will, we thought a healthy compromise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we only have a couple minutes left here. I'm going to squeeze in one more question, and then I want to ask you how people can get in touch with you if they're trying to decide how they're going to vote. Affordable housing. It's kind of like a perennial issue now because it's tough for people who are in the local wage scale that's paid around here to afford housing. Mm-hmm. Do you think the city has a role in helping encourage affordable housing?
Yeah, good question.
And what would that role be?
So that's something that you'll never hear from me. Or have ever heard from me in my campaign the past 8 years or even before when I started getting involved in politics, is the government's job to intervene and to somehow create this affordable housing, which you can never get a good definition, right? Mm-hmm. Affordable to you might be different what's affordable to me. And is that the government's job to somehow create affordable housing, where usually the market decides what that is? So I never touched that issue because it's not an issue that I believe government could solve, number one. And two, if the government does get involved, they're probably going to screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the reality. This is a deeper issue than just Sandpoint. This is a nationwide issue. And it doesn't stem from your local politics. It actually stems from your federal government. And it doesn't matter if they're Democrat or Republican. You have a Federal Reserve that's able to just print money, which devalues our dollar. So then you have companies like BlackRock and all these big hedge funds who, instead of parking their money in dollars, which actually loses value, they're parking it in assets like gold, silver, Bitcoin, and housing. So then the rise of property goes up, and that's what makes it unaffordable. And I'm telling you right now, I've yet to hear a good idea from anybody. I've heard a couple of like okay ideas that might work for a few houses here and there, but not the issue, not the large scale issue that we have. So I don't believe anybody has a solution to that. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I have a solution, nor is it something I'm going to tackle, because quite frankly, it's not my job.
Yeah.
Is it
driven by the market?
It's very difficult. But you have to also remember where we live. Mm-hmm. We have a ski resort, we have a very big lake
mm-hmm.
that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great community. Who wouldn't want to live here? The free market will dictate that. Would I love to live at Lake Tahoe? I absolutely would, but can I afford that? I can't. That's just part of life.
I like this place better than Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I'm giving you an example. Life's not fair. We all can't live where we want to live, and I am thankful for where I'm at and able to live here, and I'm hoping that my kids would be able to, but they may not.
Mm-hmm.
They might not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Joel, we are out of time now. So how can people find out more about your candidacy and get in touch with you if they're trying to figure out how they
want to go? Yeah, come down to the restaurant, grab an apron, and stand next to me, and we can chat it up, wash some dishes with me.
Or at least
me.
Buy a burrito.
Yeah, we could talk. No, I try to be really accessible. I'm always in the community. You can come talk to me. You can, you know, go listen to city council meetings. And but I believe that I've been entrusted the past 8 years, and I'm asking for people to trust me for four more, and if not, then that's okay, right? Yep. There are good people running, and there are good people in this community, and we're in good hands, I believe.
Well, Joel, I started out saying, you know, it might be kind of a thankless job, but I'll say to you and all the candidates, thanks for putting yourself out there to serve our folks this way.
Appreciate that, Chris. Thank you.